Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Samach Tetam and Aleph by the Mishnah. The Mishnah is continuing what we spoke about at the end of the previous Mishnah, which is that when an individual marries a Nachrit or Shivcha Knanit, we go after matrilineal descent. That means that the determination of the child will be made by the mother. Based on that, Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Yocholim Mamzerim Litaher. I have a way to get rid of the problem of Mamzer. Someone who's a Mamzer, we know that whenever they get married, the children that are born to that mamzer will always have that gam in them, and they'll be mamzerim. But he says, but I have a way to get around that problem. Ketzad, mamzer shenasa shivcha. If you have a mamzer who marries a shivcha kenanit, bina eved. The child that's born is an eved, is a slave, an eved kenani, because we go after matrilineal descent in that case. Shechriro, if you free the slave then, nimtzah ben, ben chorin. Then that child that's born will become an individual who is a free and clear Yisrael. So here's a way for a mamzer to have children who are not mamzerim. He'll marry a shivcha kananit, and through marrying the shivcha kananit, it will take away the shem mamzer, the begam that will persist in the child as the eved kanani side of it. And that eved kanani, once freed, will become a full-fledged Yisrael. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Harizeh Eved Mamzer. That doesn't solve the problem because the child carries both names. He's an Eved Kanani, but he's also a Mamzer. So now the Gemara asks about Rabbi Tarfon's suggestion, which is Yibailu, Rabbi Tarfon Nechat Chilok Amar, O Diavad Gamar. When Rabbi Tarfon makes the suggestion, he's saying that we want people to do this, we'll make this recommendation to people, and this is a way that they can clear up the problem of Mamzerut. Or diavad, or do we say that it's only bidyevid that he says that this works because we're not going to tell someone to go marry a shivcha kenanit? Now we will deal with, Rashi already notes it over here, the problem exists here, which is how is he allowed to marry a shivcha kenanit, which would heavily favor the side of saying that it's bidyavad, which is the pasuk in the Torah that says, lo yeh kadesh b'Yisrael. Over there, the Targum translates that to mean that a person may not marry a shivcha kenanit. If that's the case, there's an Iser Doraita. So if that's true, we would not recommend to the individual to do this because then they'd be in violation of an Iser Doraita. But Bidiavad, once they've done it, then we would say, okay, it works because the Shivcha, in the end, clarifies or clears out the problem of Mamzerut. So we will discuss why it is that possibly it would be Mutar Diavad and maybe even Lechatchila. I'm going to defer that discussion until the end of this little piece in the Gemara. So Tashma, Amru lo Rabbi Tarfon, Tiharta et Zecharim. You took care of the males. Velo Tiharta et Nikevot. On the other hand, you did not take care of the Nikevot. The underlying assumption over here is that Rashi says that if it was a male, the individual is a Mamzer, could go to another city. And when he goes to another city where nobody knows him, he could conceal his true identity and call himself an Eved. He'll just present himself as an Eved Kanani. Who's going to question the fact that he's an Eved Kanani? That's something that nobody would do voluntarily. So if he comes in and says an Eved Kanani, people will believe him and then allow him to marry a Shivcha Kananit. On the other hand, for Nikeva, Rashi writes, Ein derech isha de galot mim koma. First of all, women don't just travel to other locations or move to a new place. Ulvakesh tachbulot inasei, sit there and then try to get married in an underhanded or a concealed fashion. Because their people are responsible for her, they're going to be people who stop her from doing that. So, the Chachamim over here say that as far as the Zecharim, the Mamzer, you've taken care of the problem. But the Mamzeret, you haven't addressed the issue. V'amart, if you say the Chatchila Kamar, if the suggestion that Rabbi Tarfon is making is even the Chatchila, Mamzeret, nami tinasev l'avdo. Then why can't the Mamzeret just get married to an Eved? Meaning that if it's bidyavad, and we're doing this all in a way that is concealed and hushed, then I understand why you'd make a distinction between males and females, because for the male, it's easier for him to go out and do this concealed or underhanded type of marriage. On the other hand, for the woman, it's much harder. But if you're saying l'chatchila, you're allowed to do it, it should make no difference whether they're male or female, because we're in broad daylight, we would allow this to happen. We would recommend this happening. Where it says, no, that the problem is Eved ein lo chayis. And Eved has no yichus, which is the problem or underlying issue over here. We already saw this because it says, Shulachem poim achamor. You should stay together with the donkey. Am hadome lechamor. That they're compared to a chamor. And therefore, the Eved has no yichus. Now, what's interesting about this is that Gemara is now making a distinction to say that an Eved has no Yichus, but a Shifra Kananit does have Yichus. Even though the Gemara brought on the previous daf the same Pasuk that tells you that a Eved is disqualified, cannot produce Kiddushin, and has no ability to marry because he's an Amah Domeh L'Chamor, the Gemara brought that same Pasuk for a Shifra Kananit as well. If that's the case, if you say that an Eved has no Chayis, then why does a Shifra Kananit have any Chayis? But the Gemara here is drawing a distinction along those lines, saying that there's a difference between an Eved and a Shifra. I think that you could suggest the difference being that when it comes to a child that is born to a mother, the natural lineage or connection that is there is between a mother and a child. It's no question that the mother gave birth to the child. The bigger Chiddush is to assign the father's Yichus to the child, because there's no automatic, I'd call it, or directed connection between the father and the child. So the chiddush is that we say the Beit Avutam, that we say that the father has influence over the yichus of the child. And that might be the difference over here. The fact that a Shifra Kananit, when she has a child, the child's an Eved, that's a natural outcome of the mother giving birth to a child, because the child follows the mother, and she was the one who gave birth to him. The fact that you would assign the father's yichus to the child, that's a much bigger chiddush, because the father does not have a natural connection to the child. So therefore, you need to have some sort of halachic connection to the child. And because by Eved Knani, it's Amah Domeh L'Chamor, which means like a behema, which means that there is no yichus in the sense of connection between the father and the child, you can't pass it on. That difference will result in the fact that when a mamzer marries a Shifra Knanit, the child that is born is an Eved Knani and would solve your problem. On the other hand, when you have a mamzeret marry an Eved, that won't solve your problem, because the Eved Kenani has no yichus, and therefore his status will not be applied to the child, and the child will remain a mamzer and not become an Eved Kenani. And that's a distinction being made over here. So the distinction is actually halachic now, not just a practical problem. Therefore, it could even be lechatchila. Even if we told you lechatchila you could do this, this difference might exist because Eved ain't lo chayis. So Tashma, let's see if we can conclude from this story what Rabbi Tarfon's position was. Dush bezichnei de Rabbi Samlai, the host, the bed and breakfast for Rabbi Samlai, mamzer hava, he was a mamzer, varmalei. And Rabbi Samlai said to him, iakadmatach taratinu livenecha, had you known me earlier, or had I known you before you got married, I would have helped you out to take care of your children so they would not be mamzerim. So now the Gemara says, "Iamar bishlam alachatchila shapir." If you say that Rabbi Tarfon's din is alachatchila, that's why Rabbi Samlai is telling him, "I could have solved your problem because I could have given you advice, and you would have married a shifcha kananit and solved your problem." That's only if it's alachatchila. Iamar diavad. If you say that Rabbi Tarfon's din is only diavad, my nihu, then what type of advice is he going to give him? He's not allowed to tell him alachatchila to get married to a shifcha kananit. So what exactly is it that he's going to tell him? So he says, the mincev le etza, he'll give him advice, v'amalei, and he'll tell him the following, zil gnov, go steal, v'zdabin be'eved ivri, and then you'll be sold as an eved ivri. And then, as an eved ivri, you'll be entitled to marry a shifcha kinanit. Now, Rashi already jumps on the problem and says, how have you solved the problem? If you said before, we don't want to recommend you marry a shifcha kinanit, because there's an aveira there, and therefore he wouldn't give the advice, so instead of telling him to go marry Shifcha Kananit, he tells him to go steal? How does that solve the problem? Why is stealing any better than marrying a Shifcha Kananit? So over here, the Rishonim have different approaches to solve that problem. Some suggest that maybe when you steal Amanat on the content or condition of returning the money, that's not called an Aveira, that's not called stealing. So maybe that would be the case. Or you set it up in a case where the person who you steal from is willing to forgive you for that stealing. In addition to that, obviously the case or scenario has to be a case where when they steal, then they will be sold into slavery because they don't have any other money or valuables. So it also has to be in a situation where he would be sold into slavery for his geneva. But those are the ways that the Rishonim deal with it. On the other hand, Rashi and the Tosafot say, Ein hachanami, that this would not necessarily have been good advice. And any Gemara does not ask the question I'm here, oh, tell him to steal or tell him to do something wrong, because the Gemara has a better question right now, which we're going to read in a second, which undermines the whole scenario, and therefore it wasn't relevant anymore. But in Achanami, the Gemara could have asked the question. Or the last possibility is that we learned earlier in the Masechta that there's a machloket as to which type of Eved Ivri can marry a Shifcha Kananit. The ability or the right to marry a Shifcha Kananit is only mentioned in the Parshia with regards to an Eved Ivri that was sold by Beit Din. It's not mentioned by the pure Eved Ivri case where he sells himself into slavery. Therefore, there's a machloket that we saw earlier in the Masechta, whereby the Chachamim say that the one who is sold into being an Eved Ivri by Beit Din can marry a Shifcha Kananit. On the other hand, the one who is selling himself into being an Eved Ivri may not marry a Shifcha Kananit. So based on that, then you'd have to steal to have this scenario come up, and that's why it would be problematic. But there is an alternate opinion, Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, who says that whatever is found in one Parsha is moved to the other Parsha through the Hekesh or through the Gzera Shava that we had over there. And therefore, even a regular Eved Ivri would be entitled to marry a Shifcha Kananit. So what Rashi and Tosafot mention is that even if we had questioned about the Gneva, the Gemara could have just answered, it's according to Rabbi Eliezer, who says that a regular Eved Ivri can get married to Shifcha Kananit. So instead of telling him to steal, he could have told him, sell yourself into slavery. There is an alternate opinion, and I actually mentioned this when we learned the Gemara early in the Masechta, that the Taz brings, and the Haggot Runchenberg mentions it over here, that from this Gemara, it sounds like that when it comes to an Eved Ivri marrying a Shifcha Kananit, the difference actually might be this, that by a case where Beit Din sells him into slavery, the Adon can force him to marry a Shifcha Kananit as part of his work. On the other hand, when he sells himself into slavery, the Adon cannot compel him to marry the Shifcha Kananit, but if he willingly or voluntarily is willing to marry the Shifcha Kananit, then we would allow him to do it. And that might be the difference in the Parshiot, is whether the Adon could force him or not, but that means that in either scenario, the Eved Ivri could marry a Shifcha Kananit. And that would solve the problem here as well. So now the Gemara moves on, and this is the question that Rashi and Tosafot say undermines the whole case anyway, so that's why the Gemara didn't even bother to pursue this question, which is, Ubishnei de Rabbi Samlai Eved Ivri Mehavo. Since when were there Eved Ivri in the time of Rabbi Samlai? V'amamar, ain't Eved Ivri noheg, el bezman sheyovel noheg. The only time that Eved Ivri exists, or the institution of an Eved Ivri exists, is at the time that the Yovel exists. Now, how far that goes is actually a machloket here between the Rashba and the Ritva. As to when we say an Eved Ivri, does that mean that there's no institution whatsoever? Eved Ivri doesn't exist, period, when there's no Yovel? Or does it mean that the halachot of an Eved Ivri do not apply, meaning that the ability to marry a Shifcha Kananit and certain other things about when he goes free and things that are connected to the Yovel, those don't apply, but you could still purchase an Eved Ivri. It just won't be subject to all the rules because they don't apply when there is no Yovel. So that's a machloket at the Rashba and the Ritva. But nevertheless, it's pretty clear here that how could Rabbi Samlai be giving advice for him to become an Eved Ivri and marry a Shifcha Kananit if that institution doesn't exist in his time? From this you must conclude that Rabbi Tarfon l'chatchila kamar. Rabbi Tarfon, his suggestion was l'chatchila, meaning that he was saying that you could make this recommendation and people could do this out in the open. Shmamina. And that would be the proof because of the fact here that Rabbi Samlai was giving advice to his host or his bed and breakfast individual, telling him that I could have solved your problem based on Rabbi Tarfon. And that would mean l'chatchila, he could tell him to go marry a Shifcha Kananit. And I'm Rabbi Yehuda Mishmol, locha ke Rabbi Tarfon. We hear Rabbi Shmuel say the halacha is like Rabbi Tarfon. So now we have to go back to the original question. When we formulated the original question as to whether it's l'atchila or b'diavad, there we said that the question revolves around this problem of the pasuk of v'lo yeh kadesh b'bnei Yisrael, that you may not have a male harlot be involved in bnei Yisrael. The Targum over there translates that to mean that you may not be engaged in relationships that involve znut, which is that you may not marry a Shifcha Kananit, and that is the translation of Unklus over there. So first of all, the way to solve that problem, if you're saying the Chatchila, that they can get married, depends on how you view that mitzvah. According to Rashi, the Tosafot, and many of the Rishonim, that's an Iser d'oraita for one to engage with a Shifcha Kananit. And if that's the case, how can we make such a recommendation to a Mamzer? For others, like the Rambam and some of the opinions that are brought down in the Shulchan Aruch who say that the Isser is only an Isser midrabanan, then it would be much easier to understand. If you say the Isser is a derabanan, we could say that the Rabbanan waived this Isser in cases of necessity, like the case here by the Mamzer where he really has no choice because he wants to purify his offspring, and therefore will waive the Isser derabanan. But for those who think it's an Isser d'oraita, how do you overcome that Isser d'oraita? So there are differing approaches, but they all revolve around basically the same idea, which is that When it comes to Lo Yeh Kadesh B'Vnei Yisrael, it says you cannot be a Kadesh in B'nei Yisrael. A Mamzer, because of his status of not being able to join the Kahal of Yisrael, therefore is somewhat of an outsider. And since he's an outsider, maybe the mitzvah of Lo Yeh Kadesh B'Vnei Yisrael doesn't apply to him. As opposed to marrying a Nochrit, a non-Jewish woman, where it says Lo Titchatein Bam, which is a generic statement that doesn't say who it applies to, it seemingly applies to everyone, a Mamzer would be included under that. On the other hand, when it comes to the restriction of marrying a Shifcha Knanit, Lo Yeh Kadesh B'Vnei Yisrael, maybe he would be excluded. Now, others, and the Rishonim, and say over in the name of Rabbeinu Tam, that the Isur of Lo Yeh Kadesh B'Vnei Yisrael only applies to someone where the individual is not already a Kadesh or generated through Kadeshut, which is that the Kadesh is illicit or improper biot that one has. Meaning that the word kadosh is used both to mean holy, but kadosh is also, as Rashi notes at the beginning of Parshat Kedoshim, is also used with regards to arayot, which is that kadesh or kadosh is someone who is designated for a particular purpose. It could be for something good or something bad. Over here, kadeshot or biot that are improper are biot that are designated to be znut and not to be for the real purpose of biot. So here, when it says, Lo Yeh Kadesh B'Vnei Yisrael, is because if this person engaged with the Shifcha Kananit, those biot, since he can't marry her, there is no kiddushin, then the biot will be biot of znut, and therefore they're called a kadesh, because they're engaging in biot of kadeshut. But the restriction of Lo Yeh Kadesh B'Vnei Yisrael will only apply to someone who is not a kadesh already. But a mamzer, who is a product of an illicit bi'ah, his whole existence, his whole creation was through illicit relations, or these biot znut, therefore he is not subject to this rule of Lo Yeh Kadesh B'Vnei Yisrael, because he's already a Kadesh in some sense, because his creation was through that Kadeshut. And for that reason, the Isur does not apply to him, and that's why we'll explain why this Mamzer L'Chatchila could engage with the Shifcha Kananit, despite the Isur that's found in the Torah, because the Isur just may not apply to him, for all the reasons that we just discussed. Right now, the Gemara continues here to discuss the latter half of the Mishnah, which is Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Harize Eved Mamzer. That when the person gets married, it doesn't help you, because they'll both be an Eved Kanani, but they'll also keep their shame Mamzerut. So Rabbi Lazar, the Amora, says about this statement of Rabbi Eliezer, the Tana, my time made the Rabbi Eliezer. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkunus' position over here? Damar Kara, because the Pasuk says, Lo yavo lo b'kal Hashem. That's what's talking about a mamzer. The word lo is extraneous in the context, and therefore the Gemara dashens for the word lo, haleich achar psulo, that his psul will follow him or stick to him. And that means that when there is a mamzer involved in a marriage, despite any other pgamim that follow down to the offspring, so will the mamzerut, meaning it will remain stuck in his lineage. Rabbanan, hahu b'Yisrael shenasa mamzeret. Now, Rabbanan saying that lo is talking about a case with a Yisrael that marries a mamzeret. Salkadatcha mina, you would have thought the mishpechutam levetol tamktiv, that it says that the yichus follows the father. So when the Yisrael marries a mamzeret, then it should be that it follows the father's yichus, and that the mamzerut should not be expressed in the offspring. So at the lo, the word lo comes to teach you an afke, and says no, that even in this case, the mother's lineage or yichus will affect the child, and if it's Yisrael to Mamzeret, the child will also be deemed to be a Mamzer. So that's how the Rabbanan use it, or how Rabbi Tarfon would use the word lo, not to speak about our case, but rather the case where it's a Mamzeret to Yisrael, and they will not come to the conclusion that Rabbi Lezer came to, which is that the din of Mamzer sticks no matter what the situation is. Rabbi Lezer, alav afagav tichtiv nishvotam leveto tam, atalo afke. So he says, just like you say, by the case of a Yisrael to Mamzeret, the lo comes and tells you that the shame Mamzer is expressed in the child, Hachanami, afagav dichtiv, ha'yishav yiladea tielud aduneha. So even though over here, by the Shifcha Kananit, where matrilineal descent determines that the child is an Eved Kanani, we'll also say that the lo comes along and takes him away from that natural case, and also brings in the mamzerut to him, and also deems him to be a mamzer. So just the way you use lo in the situation or circumstance of Yisrael to mamzeret, to say that despite the fact of mishpulotam levetutam, the mamzerut is expressed in the child. So to over here, by the case of the Eved Ivri, or to the Shifka Kananit, when they get married, even though there's an expression of Eved Kanani in the child, the law will tell you still have the manifestation of mamzerut in the child as well. And it will be expressed in the child. The child will be both a mamzer and an Eved Kanani. Rabbanan, say, kovlad b'me Shifka Kananit, kovlad mebe behema dami, that a fetus in the womb of a Shifcha Kananit has the same din as a baby that is born to an animal, which means, as Rashi says, Shemit Yaches Achar Aviv Klal, that it has no connection to the father at all. That relationship is completely severed in that case because of Ama Domeh L'Chamor tells you that there is no Kiddushin. There's no Kiddushin. There's also no connection. And so since you've severed the connection between the father and the child, the only expression there is the expression of the mother, which is a Shifcha Kananit, makes him an Eved Kanani. But the Mamzerut is not relevant because the father is out of the picture completely. Just like by the Behema, the child or the youngster that is born, youngin that is born to this animal is only determined by the mother because she's the one that gives birth to it. The father is not known or is not really relevant. Then, so too over here, by the case of the Shifcha Kananit, the child will only be deemed by the status of his mother, nothing to do with his father whatsoever. And so therefore the word lo can't help you over here because the father just has no relationship. Okay, with that, we end the third perek, Hadron Alach Homer. And then this leads us into the next perek, what we've been discussing until now, which is the Mishnah of the beginning of the fourth perek, which is Asara Yuchasin Alumi Bavel. There were 10, you can call them Yichus in the traditional sense, but here it's really categories of individuals who went from Bavel. And these are individuals who have the ability to create Kiddushin, but because of their different statuses, it will affect their ability to marry different individuals. And therefore, we had that came up from Bavel with Ezra, Kohanai, Levi'ei, and Yisraelei. You have Kohanim, Levi'im, and Yisraelim, all who left Bavel with Ezra. You have Chalalei, which are Kohanim, Chalalim. You have Gerei, which are converts, Gerim. Charurei, which means Shichrur, Eved Kanani, or a Shifcha Kananit who were freed. Even though they have the same status as a ger, nevertheless, the Mishnah separates them because their din is different, which is that we would tell you to marry a ger before you would marry a Eved Kanani, or we tell you to marry a Gioret before we tell you to marry a Shifcha Kananit, because they come from the Kanan, which is Arur, versus the ger or the Gioret that don't have that stigma associated with them. So therefore, even though their dinim are the same, the Mishnah separates them because there is a hierarchy here. Mamzerei, there were mamzerim, nitinei, which the Gemara in Yevamot discusses in more detail. We discuss them. These are the givonim who came in the time of Yoshua to convert, and they were nimol, they got the brit milah, and later on in the time of David, he puts a gzera on them that they no longer can marry into Klal Yisrael because of the incident that happened with Shaul and his children and the fact that they asked for revenge and they killed them and then hung them up and then they hanged them and left them out in the field. And because of that achzariut, David HaMelech was gozer that they can no longer marry or join Klal Yisrael. Whether they were permitted in the first place to marry Klal Yisrael is not clear because they were from the Shiva Amamim. So whether the problem is a problem de Rabbanan or a problem de Orait or how you get around that problem, that's part of the discussion in the Gemara in Yevamot and the Rishonim over there. Shtuki v'asufi, and the last two, 9 and 10, are the Shtuki and the Asufi, which the Mishnah in a second will define for us what they are. So, Kohanei, Levi'ei, v'Yisrael, mutarim, lavo, zeh bazeh. Meaning that Kohanim, Levi'im, and Yisraelim can marry one and another. There's no problem in terms of a Kohen marrying a Yisraelite, or a Yisrael marrying a Bat Kohen. So, all of these are mutar to go with each other. Levi'ei, v'Yisraelei, Chalalei, Gerei, v'Charurei, mutarim, lavo, zeh bazeh. So, if you drop Kohen out of the picture, then Levi, Yisrael, Chalalei, a Kohen, Chalal, or whether that's a male or a female, a convert, a ger, or a gioret, and a charurei, a slave that was freed, all of those can marry a Levi in Israel without any problem. The Kohanim are precluded over here, because obviously a Kohen is restricted from marrying a Kohen Chalal, or a Kohenet Chalelet, because that would be Michalel, their Zaro, also. They can't marry a ger, or a gioret, or a Shifcha Kananit who's freed, because they have a status of Zonah. Rashi discusses this, we've discussed it in the past, why that is, or why we assign them the status of Zonah, so therefore they're precluded from marrying the Kohen because of their status as a Zonah. So therefore, Kohen's left out over here. But as far as Levi and Israel, they don't have those restrictions, and therefore they're allowed to marry them. So all of those are allowed to marry each other. Gerei v'charurei mamzerei v'nitinei sh'tukei v'asufei kulam muterim lavo zeh b'zeh. So all of these individuals are allowed to marry each other. First of all, this is according to the Shita of Rabbi Yossi, who says that the Kahal Gerim is not called a Kahal, and therefore they're allowed to marry the Mamzerim, because the Mamzerim says lo yavo lo b'kal Hashem. So only Kal Hashem is restricted from marrying a Mamzer. So that's a machloket we're going to see between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. We also saw it before, that whether the Gerim are considered to be a Kahal or not to be considered a Kahal, this Mishnah obviously deems them not to be part of the Kahal, or not to be a separate Kahal, and therefore they're allowed to marry the Mamzerim. So in addition to that, the Shtuki and the Asufi, which are Sfeikim, we'll see in a second, Mamzer, there we're allowing, this Mishnah says that a Sfeik Mamzer can marry a Vadai Mamzer, and that's part of the statement of the Mishnah by saying that all these individuals can get married to each other. So the Mara says now, Elohim Shtuki, what is this Shtuki that you said? Koshim Makirat Imo, Veinim Makirat Aviv. A Shtuki is someone who knows who his mother is, but does not know who his father is. Asufi, Koshin Neasaf Min Ashuk. Now, Sufi is somebody who was brought in, and we have no idea who either of the parents are. Doesn't know his father or his mother, and therefore he is considered to be an Asufi, because he was brought in, but we don't have any Yichus whatsoever. And then, Abashal Haya Korea the Shtuki Beduki. And the Gemara will discuss this. Abashul calls the Shtuki a Beduki something that needs to be checked into. And as Rashi notes over here, the reason that, and the Gemara will speak about as well, that the reason it uses the word Shtuki over here is because when the child asks, who's my dad, Mishatkinoto, you silence him, because they don't know, and therefore they don't allow him to speak about it, or they tell him, don't, just don't talk about it, it's not worth you talking about that. Alright, so here we have, those two are individuals who are also sfeikot about their yichus, either because the shtuki, because he doesn't know who his father is, or the asufi, because he has no idea who his mother or his father is, and therefore you're left in a case of sfeik, and the Mishnah is indicating that because they are sfeikot, we do allow them to marry the Mamzerim and any of the other individuals mentioned at the end of the list. So now the Gemara goes back to discuss the Mishnah and says, Asara yuchasim alumi bavel. There were these 10 categories that came up from Bavel. My iria detani alu mi bavel. Why does it use the term alu, that they came up from Bavel? Nitne halchu l'Eretz Yisrael. Why don't you talk about their destination, which was they were going to Eretz Yisrael? Why are you telling me about where they came from and the fact that they're alu? Where it says, Milta gavurche kamashmalan. As a sidebar, it's teaching us some information over here. Kidetanyo, we have a braita. Vikamta valita lamakom asher yibchar Hashem lokecha. The pasuk in Devarim says that when you have an issue, you'll go up to the makom, the place that Hashem has chosen. Lameid shebeit hamikdash gvoa mikol Eretz Yisrael. That tells you where the Beit HaMikdash sits is one of the highest points in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, wherever you are in Eretz Yisrael, you would have to then ascend to the makom asher yivchar Hashem lokecha, and that's why it uses in the pasuk v'kamta v'alita. On the other hand, that's only with regards to the Beit HaMikdash. How do we know that Eretz Yisrael gvoha mikol haaretzot? That Israel, Eretz Yisrael, is also higher than all the other lands. Bishlama Beit HaMikdash gvoha be'achol Eretz Yisrael. That, how do you know that the Beit HaMikdash is higher than all of Eretz Yisrael? Hainu dichtiv. That's what it says. Divrei rivot bisharecha v'kamta v'alita. That you will go up. And there it doesn't define where you're starting from, so it assumes anywhere you are in Eretz Yisrael, you would have to be Kamta Valita to the Makom. El Eretz Yisrael Gva Mikol Eretz Zot Minolan. How do you know the fact that Eretz Yisrael is higher than all the other lands? Dichtiv. Achein hinei yamim baim neum Hashem. Lo yeamer old chay Hashem asher lad b'nei Yisrael meretz Mitzrayim. They no longer will say, basically, praise Hashem who took them out of Eretz Mitzrayim to Eretz Yisrael. Ki im chay Hashem asher la v'shevit b'nei Yisrael meretz Safon. That it should be that Hashem, or praise Hashem, who took them out of Eretz Safon or Eretz Fina, which is the northern place, which the Navi and Yirmiyahu uses to refer to Bavel. Umikol ha'aretzot asher hidachtim esham. And all the other lands where Hashem has dispersed them and sent them out and spread them out to. So over there it says Eretz Bavel plus all the other aretzot. And it says in the Pasuk, asher he'ala, that Hashem brought them up. So because it brought them up, you see from that that no matter where you're found or where the exile is, it's always upwards when you're going to Eretz Yisrael. Now, the reason for that, obviously, in terms of topography, it's not always true that Eretz Yisrael is the highest point. So many explain this. The Chatam Sofer says it over here, that this refers to the spirituality or the Ruchaniyut, of Eretz Yisrael, and that would make sense. The Beit HaMikdash is the highest point in Eretz Yisrael, meaning it's the highest level of Kedusha, Ruchaniyut in Eretz Yisrael. And the same is true of Eretz Yisrael versus the other lands. Eretz Yisrael is more Kadosh, or has more Ruchaniyut than any of the other lands. There are others who want to suggest that it is true because the fact that the world is a globe, then by definition, you can always set what is the highest point by setting the globe in such a position that that point is sitting at the top of the circle. And therefore, everything else is lower than that point. That's a way to explain it physically, although it's much more compelling to say that it's talking about a spiritual height rather than a physical height. So now the Gemara says, "My area, Datani Alumi Bavel." So then why does it use the terminology Alumi Bavel? Nitnei Alu the Eretz Yisrael. Meaning that over here, we understand now why you use the word Alu, because it's going to teach you Agav Orche that Eretz Yisrael is higher. But then why does it say Alu Mibavel, talking about where they left, rather than the destination, Alu Le Eretz Yisrael? Why did it choose to do that? Masayile Le Rabbi Elazar. This is a help or a proof text to what Rabbi Elazar says. Dam Rabbi Elazar, Lo Ala Ezra Mibavel, Aj Asas Kesolet Nikia Vala. Ezra did not leave Bavel until he cleansed it or filtered it out to the way it came into fine flour, because he took all the psulim with him up to Eretz Yisrael. And the reason being, which is that the Ezra realized that when he was making Aliyah, that he was also taking the majority of the Chachamim with him. And when he took the Chachamim with him, whatever he left behind in Bavel would not then be able to deal with the Psulim that he left behind, or would not know what to do with the Psulim that he left behind. So what Ezra did was, he says, let me take all the Psulim with me to Eretz Yisrael. Now, even though in Eretz Yisrael it wouldn't be perfect, but there at least they could deal with it because, first of all, they have the Kohanim and they have the Mikdash, and the Kohanim and the Mikdash spend time going through Yichus, and it's something that's important to them. Plus, they'll have the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael. And since they have all the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael, then they'd be able to identify who these people are and manage the situation much better than they could in Bavel. Remember that Bavel is a center of Torah, only really happens much later on. In that Eretz Yisrael is the center of Torah, all the Tanaim in the Mishnayot come from Eretz Yisrael. It's only later on in the time of the Amoraim, in the time of Rav, and a little before that, that you start to see a shift where the Torah moves to Bavel as well, and then there's still a balance, and then eventually it shifts very strongly to Bavel, but that's a much later time. The point of Ezra, if he's taking all the Chachamim up to Eretz Yisrael, then there's going to be nothing left in Bavel to deal with the issue. Now, the truth is that you could have just done the opposite. What Ezra could have done was left all the psulim in Bavel and taken up all the people that were Sheirim up to Eretz Yisrael, and he would have accomplished the same outcome, which is that he'd know that all the people that are in Bavel are Pasul, and you wouldn't have to know anything, or you wouldn't need any Rabbanan or Chachamim to tell you. You just know that Bavel is problematic. So why did he do it in a way where he took the psulim to Eretz Yisrael? So the answer might lie in what Rashi says later on. You can see this in the wide lines in Rashi. It says, Lefisha Yuyoshvim Bavel Bishalva. People lived in Bavel, they were in a comfortable situation. Ve'olim b'Yerushalayim hayu ba'oni u'betorach ha'malacha. People lived in Yerushalayim were in poverty and had to work very hard. U'be'imat kol svivotah, and the fear of the enemies from around. Ha'anach liva'ei diktani matnitin ha'anach delo chazla uvodo hayu. So then, based on that, Rashi says that there were many people who weren't going to go. Ezra could not convince everyone to go up to Eretz Yisrael, so if he wanted to take all the ksherim with him, there are many wealthy individuals, people who were living in comfort, who said, I'd rather stay in the Galut than go up to Eretz Yisrael. My life is good. And therefore, I don't want to make Aliyah. I don't want to go to Eretz Yisrael. So Ezra had to do the opposite. He took the Psulim. For the Psulim, life isn't so great in Bavel because they were already shunned or excluded from the community. And so for them, this was a chance to start a new life, to go somewhere else, maybe where things would be better for them. So he was able to convince the Psulim to come with him, but he couldn't necessarily convince the Sheirim to come with him, and that's why he decided to do it this way, which was that he took all the Psulim with him to Eretz Yisrael to be able to deal with it in Eretz Yisrael, and left behind in Bavel only those that were Sheirim. Itmar. Abaya Mar Alu. When the Mishnah says Alu, Me'elem Tnan, means that they came voluntarily. Rav Amar He'elum Tnan, it means that he compelled them to come along with him. Because Mifle gave the Rabbi Lazar. They're arguing in this position, Rabbi Lazar. Dama Rabbi Lazar, Lo Ala Ezra mi Bavel, Asha Asah Kisolet Nikia. That Ezra went up from Bavel, he only left once he made it into fine flour, meaning he cleaned out all the psulim. So, Vala, and then went up. Abaye late the Rabbi Lazar. Abaye doesn't hold the Rabbi Lazar, and therefore, whoever came voluntarily went with him. Whoever didn't come voluntarily stayed behind. So those that came voluntarily, they were listed in the Mishnah. They were all these different categories, but not that necessarily that Ezra compelled them. Rava Itlay the Rabbi Elazar. Rava has the position of Rabbi Elazar, and therefore Ezra compelled these individuals to come with him. Basically, he forced the Psulim to go up to Eretz Yisrael with him. Ibai Dema, some say the Kuliyama Itlahu the Rabbi Elazar, that everybody holds of this sheet of Rabbi Elazar. And this is the machlok mitim. Mar savar frushe afrishinu ume nafshayu saliki. That he separated, or he basically outed them. He said, or he declared whoever the psulim were, and he identified who the psulim were and what their psul was. Then they decided of their own volition to come along. Mar savar bal kochayu sukinu. That after he declared them and made them well known as being psulim, he still had to compel them to come with him to Eretz Yisrael. So the machloket is, did after they were identified, did they just voluntarily come? That's a bayishita. Or rabbishita is, even after they were identified, they still wanted to stay in Bavel, and then Ezra compelled them to come with him. So bishlam adamandamar alu. It makes sense according to a bayu who says that they went up voluntarily. Hainu damar Yehuda amar Shmuel kol haratzot isa the Eretz Yisrael. That all the other lands are an isa. And isa, as Rashi says, is a big cholent, a mix, because when you make dough, you throw in water, flour, salt, and yeast, you throw in all the different things that you put in there, and you mix it together, and it's hard to identify them separately once they're mixed together. So too, any Eretz outside of Eretz Yisrael, their yichus is questionable vis-a-vis Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is Isad Bavel. And Eretz Yisrael is an Isad Bavel, means that the yichus in Eretz Yisrael is not on par or on level with that of Bavel, because Bavel is the cleanest or has the most proper Yichus. Elamandamar Helum, if you say that Ezra took them all up to Eretz Yisrael, Mida Yadinu, they know who they are. So if you say that after he identified them, some of them stayed in Bavel, and some of them went up to Eretz Yisrael, they voluntarily went up to Eretz Yisrael, it wasn't clear who the Psulim were, and therefore you have problems in Eretz Yisrael when you get to Eretz Yisrael. On the other hand, if you say that Ezra cleaned out Bavel and then took them up to Eretz Yisrael, and they were all found in Eretz Yisrael, they were all well known because Ezra identified them. When it says, Nehid Yadi La Haudaro, they knew for that generation, they knew who they were. After time, after a certain amount of time, that became forgotten and was not well known any longer, and that's what caused the problem. So now Gemara says, Bishma, the Mandamar Alu, who says that they went voluntarily, Hainu Dichtiv. Then the pasuk in Ezra makes sense where he says, "Vekabtzeno lanar haba el." The word here, the Gemara brings over here, is not a proper quote of the pasuk. The pasuk is "anar ba el ahava," which is the river. "Venachane sham yamim shlosha." We rested or we camped there for 3 days. "Vavina ba'am," and I started to check out who we had with us. "Uba kohanim ubnei Levi lo matzadim sham." I found in the people that were there, there were Kohanim, but I could not find any Levim. So it makes sense that Ezra had no idea who he had with him because everybody came voluntarily. So then Ezra is now trying to figure out who he has there, and that's why he's looking through, and all of a sudden he realizes he has no Levim with him. El demanda amar helum. If you say that Ezra compelled them to go, ha, mizar zahire. So he says he would have known. He knew exactly who he was taking. So why is he taking a census now to figure out who he has with him if he already knew because he compelled them to come? It says, in terms of being careful and compelling people to go up, that was with the psulim. He forced the psulim to go up with him. But with the ksherim, whoever came, came. Here he didn't have to be careful. His job or what he was intending to do was to clear out all the psulim. There he was active and he knew exactly who he had. But with regards to the ksherim, whoever came, came. And therefore he didn't know who it was. And that's what he's checking out when he gets to the Nahar, Haba El Ahava. And they are camping there, or encamped there, he goes through the people to check who he got. Does he have Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim? And he finds that he has Kohanim, but he does not have Yisraelim. Now, we have a problem now, which is that, based on that pasuk, it seems like there were no Levim there. And we're going to see from other psukim, as well as our Mishnah, that there were Levim there. So how do we reconcile that problem? So that's what the Gemara says over here. Kohanei, Levi'ei, Yisraelei. Minolan de Saliku. How do you know that they went up to Eretz Yisrael? Dichtiv. It says, Vayeshvu akonim, valivim, umina am, veha misorim, amishorim, vasho arim, vanitiim, nitinim, barehem, vachol Yisrael barehem. So here you have a list in Ezra of all the people that came up and went and settled in the land of Israel. So over there the pasuk mentions Livim. So how is it that in that pasuk before, it's in the same book of Ezra, in one place it says that he took Levim, in one case it says he doesn't have any Levim. So as Rashi notes over here, that there is a distinction in Levim, which is that he did have Levim that went with him, but he didn't have any Levim that were kosher le'avoda, that were ra'oi to do the avoda in Eretz Yisrael. And Rashi here quotes the Medrash that says that when the Levim were sent into exile, that Nebuchadnezzar wanted them to play the instruments that they played the Beit HaMikdash, he wanted them to play for him or for the Avodah Zarah, and they refused to do so, and they did that by making themselves psulim, by basically biting off their thumbs or taking off their thumbs so they could no longer play the string instruments for Nebuchadnezzar. So then now when they're returning to go back to Eretz Yisrael, these Levim are unable to play. So they are Levim, but they're unable to do Avodah in the Mikdash because they don't have the thumbs with which they can do it. And Rashi over here quotes the Medrash that is associated with Al-Narot Bavel, where the Midrash on that Perek in Tehillim says that how could we sing the song of Hashem on a foreign land? And all of that, they play into this Midrash that the Levim refused to play for Avodah Zarah, and therefore they hurt themselves or damaged themselves to the point where they could no longer play the instruments. And then he says, this is where Rashi quotes what we had quoted before in Rashi, how come there were definitely Levim Ksherim that could have gone up? Where were they? So Rashi says in the end, they didn't come because they had a good life in Bavel and they ended up not coming. So what the solution to the problem is that you have Levim are going up, but all the Levim that are going up to Eretz Yisrael are Levim Psulim. And they can't play, not necessarily Psulim because of Yichus, but Psulim because they can't physically do what is needed of them in the Mikdash. On the other hand, the Levim that were Ksherim decided to stay back in Bavel because they had a good life. Alright, so now the Gemara continues and says, Chalalei Minolan. How do we know that amongst the people that went up to Eretz Yisrael from Bavel, there were also Kohanim Chalalim? Detanyo, Everbright, Rabbi Yosu Omer, Gedola Chazaka. A Chazaka has tremendous power. Shinemar, because the Pasuk says in Ezra, Ubnei HaKohanim, Bnei Chavaya, Bnei HaKotz, Bnei Barzilai, Asher Lakach, Mibnot Barzilai HaGiladi, Isha, Vayikarei Al Shimam, Ele Bikshu Ktavam, Hamit Yachsim, Velo Nimtzo. They looked for their letters of Yichus, but they couldn't find them. Vayigo Alu Mina Kuhuna. And therefore they were rejected or sent away from the Kuhuna. Goalu with the Aleph here is like the Goalu or Gaal with an Ayin, which means to either be segregated out. That's what the Tosaf Riya Zakein says, Vayitchaltsu, that they were removed, or Vayigalu means Goal, means they're disgusting, but basically segregated away from the Kohanim. Vayomer har tirshata lahem. So tirshata, as Rashi notes over here in the Midrash, refers to Nehemiah, who was the wine butler of the king, and it comes to the word tirosh. So Nehemiah says to them, asher lo yochlu mi kodesh hakodeshim, that they're not permitted to eat from the kodesh kohanim, adamod kohen lo urim vitumim, until there is a kohen that serves with an urim vitumim. And as Rashi notes, that's equivalent of saying until Mashiach comes, because we know in the Bayit Sheni there was no Urim Bitumim. So saying that you'll have to be in this state until the coming of a Kohen with an Urim Bitumim basically says until Mashiach comes, this will be your status. So then the Vamar Lehem, Areyatem Bechezkatchem, Bema Eitem Olchim Begola. That as far as what you did before in the Gola, you can retain or stay in that status. Bekodshei Gvul, that refers to Kodashim that are outside of the Mikdash, Kodshei Gvul, which is Truma. Avkanim can make Kodshei Gvul. Also over here in Eretz Yisrael, you are permitted to eat from the Kodshei Gvul. As what the Pasuk says is, Asher Yiluchlu Mikodshei HaKodashim, what you're not allowed to do is eat from the Korbanot. So you have permission to eat the Truma like you ate in Bavel. What you cannot do is eat from the Kodesh HaKodashim, which is the new stuff that will be in Eretz Yisrael, the stuff that is produced in the Mikdash, that you will not be permitted to do. And that is as a result of the fact that they were marrying into families that were problematic or that created chalalim. The question of why that is because they married into Bnei or Benot Barzilai HaGiladi, who's mentioned in the Shmuel Bet as one of the people that helps out David HaMelech. And David HaMelech makes their children a part of his table and that they are joined with David HaMelech. So why is it that they were problematic? So some Rishonim, some of the Gonim, the Rasag over here quotes the Medrash that's found in Shmuel Bet that says that Barzilai HaGiladi says to David HaMelech that it's not worth it for me to come and sit on your table. I'm already old and I can't really see and I can't really taste. So Gemara says, what made him lose his senses of his sight and taste? So they said that he was shatuf bezima, that he was involved in a lot of relations, or whether they were illicit or problematic or znut, that he was involved in that took away his senses. And so therefore, based on that, he extrapolates and says, because he had all of these affairs or znut that took place, he had many children, and those children were possibly problematic or came from problematic wives or women. And that's why people married into the family ended up having problems, because they were chalalim. So that's the way that he explains the reason as to why these individuals were there. He also makes a play on the names of those individuals that were mentioned over here, but the Bnei Chavaya and the Bnei Akots, that those are negative names, which is true in Tanakh in general, that when they see somebody as being evil or bad, the names take on a negative approach. And so here, Chavaya and Kots are negative terms. And these were individuals who caused problems for the Kohanim. And you can see here that they were rejected from being a part of the Kuhuna. So now the Gemara says, Ulaman damar, malim mitrumala yuchasin. So wait a minute. There's a machloket here as to whether a Kohen who eats truma is automatically granted the right to be part or given yichus. So over here, if you let them continue to eat truma in Eretz Yisrael, then people are going to assume that they are Kohanim yuchasim. There are others that say, no, that we're not malim mitruma leduchan or to yuchasin, and therefore we don't have to worry about it. But according to one who says we do, if they eat truma in Eretz Yisrael, then the people are going to upgrade them to be full Kohanim or Kohanim Yuchasim. It says, Shani Hotam Diriya Cheskatayu. Over there, their Chazaka was problematic already. So Rashi says that it's going to be noticeable because they won't be allowed to eat by the Kodeshim. They're only allowed to eat truma. They're not eating the Kodeshim, so it'll be obvious to people that that is the case. The Reinu Tam in the Tosafot over here offers an alternative and says no, that the problem is that they can't show their letters of Yichus. And since they couldn't show their letters of Yichus, they had a Reya, there was a problem in their Chazakah. So then, Velamai Gdola Chazakah, so then what's the Chazakah? De Meikara Achol Betruma de Rabbanan, Lusof Achol Betruma de Oraita. That the difference was that in Bavel, when they ate Truma, that was only Truma de Rabbanan, because that's Trumat Chutz La'aretz. But when they came to Eretz Yisrael, they ate Truma Doraita, because in Eretz Yisrael, Truma is Midoraita. So the greatness or the power of a Chazakah is that before they ate Truma Derabanan, that allows them now to eat Truma Midoraita. Vibay Deima, the Olam Hashtanami Bidurabanan Achol, Midoraita Lo Achol. That even now, when they're in Eretz Yisrael, they're allowed to eat from Truma Derabanan like they did in Bavel, but they're not allowed to eat Truma Doraita. As Rashi points out, Dagan, Tirosh, and Yitzhar are Chayavim Midoraita in Truma in Eretz Yisrael. So they weren't allowed to eat that, but Perot and Yirakot, which according to Rashi are only Truma Midrabanan, that they were allowed to eat in Eretz Yisrael, and that would be equivalent to that which they did in Bavel. So Nagmar says, if that's the case, then what is the Vechir Maskinim Mitruma LeYuchsin? And then you had the problem that maybe they're going to elevate them now if they eat the Truma to Yuchasin. That's not a problem, because that's only Mi Doraita. When you eat Truma Doraita, then you're Maledim Yuchsin. But Midrabanan, Lo maskinan, but when it's a din derabanan or truma derabanan, we don't do that. So one way to solve the problem of how could they eat truma, because you have a risk that they'll be malalem the yuchasin. The first answer is that they're allowed to eat truma doraita, even though they ate truma derabanan in Bavel. The chazaka allows them to eat truma doraita in Eretz Yisrael. That's what it means. Gedola chazaka. See how powerful the chazaka is. Now, when they're allowed to eat truma doraita, there's a risk that you'll be miyachis them and say that they have yichus. The answer is that Reach is Katayu. There's already a problem with them, because either you see they don't eat the Kodeshim according to Rashi, or according to Rabbeinu Tam, they can't produce their letters of Yichus, and therefore nobody will do that. The other answer is no, that they were only allowed to eat Truma Derabanan in Eretz Yisrael, like in Bavel, and the fact that they can only eat Truma Derabanan and not Truma Doraita will solve the problem, because you're only Malah Yuchsin if they eat Truma Doraita. But when they eat Truma Derabanan, we're not Malah Yuchsin. But then you ran into a problem, is Ihochi my Gdola Chazakah. What's the Gdola Chazakah? Over in Bavel, they ate Truma Derabanan. Now they're eating Truma Derabanan. What's the Gdola Chazakah? Demikara, Lakala Migza Mishum Truma Doraita. In Bavel, there was no reason to make any Gzeira about them because they were eating Truma Derabanan, but there was no risk that they would eat Truma Doraita. The Sof, when they came to Eretz Yisrael, Afagav Dikala Migza Mishum Truma Doraita, even though there's a reason to disqualify them even from Truma Derabanan because there's a risk they'll eat Truma Doraita, but the Rabbanan Acho, but the Raita Lo Acho. The Chazak allows them to keep eating Truma Derabanan despite the risk that they might eat Truma Doraita. V'aktiv, isn't it written, Vayomar Hatir Shato Lahem, Asher Lo Yochlu Mi Kodesh HaKodeshim. The Pasuk there says that they're precluded from eating Kodesh HaKodeshim. So now we're dealing with two things. the kodshe gvul, the truma, which they were allowed to continue eating, the kodshe kodashim, which they're not allowed to eat, but there are other items like kodesh, where it's not being addressed. The kodesh hakodashim hu delo yochal. Sounds like they can't eat the kodesh hakodashim, hakol midei necho, except for kodesh hakodashim, it sounds like they can participate in anything, even kodesh. Now, hachi kamar, lo midei de mikre kodesh, but lo midei de mikre kodashim, so that you can't eat things that are called kodesh, and you can't eat things that are called kodashim. Lo midei de mikre kodesh, not things that are called kodesh dichtiv, v'chozar lo yochal kodesh, that's a pasuk that references truma in Parshat Emor, and it says no zar can eat kodesh, so the word kodesh here references truma. So they're not allowed to eat truma, v'lo midei de mikre kodashim, and not things that are called kodashim, damakra. Bat kohen tiyad ish zar, a bat kohen who marries a Yisrael or a Levi, and she's no longer part of the family of the Kohanim, he b'trumata kodashim lo tochel. She's no longer permitted to eat from the trumata kodashim. Now, when we're talking about that, we're not talking about truma. We're talking about trumata kodashim, b'mamar, b'muram min kodashim. Things that are removed from the kodashim, lo tochel. She may not eat, which are the things removed from the kodesh that are given to the Kohanim, and that's the chazev v'shok. So that's talking about real kodashim. So now what you have here is that the Kohanim were precluded based on this, and the second interpretation, both from eating truma midoraita, which is manifest in the word kodesh, as well as kodashim, which is manifest in the word kodashim. And that's what it means, that he didn't permit them to eat truma doraita, and he didn't permit them to eat kodashim. And that's how you explain the pasuk says kodesh hakodashim, and not just kodesh, but also truma, because truma is represented by the word kodesh, and kodashim are represented by the kodashim. And the first answer we gave, where they were allowed to eat truma doraita, then it's much easier. It says that they couldn't eat from the kodesh hakodashim. And they couldn't eat from kodesh or kodesh hakodashim. Truma, they could eat. And therefore, you don't have to go through this. But the second answer is also able to say that the pasuk means truma and kodesh that they were precluded from, because truma in Parshat Emor is represented through the word kodesh. So sometimes when you say kodesh, it doesn't mean kodashim, it means truma. And so based on that, when Nehemiah told them they weren't allowed to participate, he was telling them you can't participate in the truma and you can't participate in the kodashim. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Ayin Amud Aleph.